It's officially DC festival season, and we're super excited about this one coming up on May 18th. Africa on the Avenue is a celebration of the vibrant African immigrant community along Georgia Avenue Northwest. There's going to be interactive art installations, fashion shows, music, food, and local business stands. This one-day festival, organized by District Bridges' Lower Georgia Avenue Main Street program, truly has something for everyone. So I'll see you there on May 18th. Go to districtbridges.org to learn more.
Today on CityCast DC, we are talking about frat chaos at the University of Maryland. We're talking about e-bike vouchers in DC, and we are going to talk with a man who's going to visit every dang park in the district. I'm here with CityCast's Priyanka Tilvey and DC environmental reporter Jacob Benston. Today is Friday, March 22nd. I'm Michael Schaefer, and here's what DC is talking about. Hey, Priyanka.
Hey.
And hey, Jacob, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
So Priyanka, you flagged this week. There's this pretty crazy post story detailing, you know, stuff that's come out in federal court filings about hazing scandal at University of Maryland. Can you explain what the deal is there?
Yeah, so you might have seen some of the headlines in the beginning of the month. On March 1st, UMD went out and banned all Greek life at the school. Like, there are 37 organizations, hundreds of students involved. There was just a blanket ban. But there was no information at that point about what this ban was about. It was just like, they're shutting down Greek life. And I remember reading that and being kind of concerned about what could have led to that. Because we've heard about a lot of really terrible hazing scandals and, you know, sexual harassment, sexual assault in Greek communities across the country over the past few years. The ban only lasted for 2 weeks because four frats sued saying that the blanket ban violated their free speech and violated their right to due process. So UMD was forced to lift the ban on most of the organizations, except for five that they have said were the reason that this ban was in place in the first place. And they have now come out with these court filings that detail some of the things that the frats are accused of doing. And they're bad. There were allegations of students having to lie down on nails, being forced to eat things that are not food, like pee and chewing tobacco and a fish that was still alive. You know, I wouldn't put it past them. A fish chewing tobacco and pee all at once sounds greater than the sum of its parts. And yeah, students talked about being spit on. The whole thing started because of an anonymous complaint from a parent saying that their child was forced to stand out in the cold for hours. Then there's like the stuff that you see on TV shows, kids being beaten with paddles. Anyway, it's a long list.
What kind of TV shows do you watch?
Do you know the show Greek?
No. No.
Well, it's fictional, but I assume that it is taken from reality because I've seen things like this and like pledges being forced to clean the chapter members' homes and like the chapter members, as in the frat boys, make the houses as disgusting as possible to try and haze their pledges in the worst possible way. It's the stuff of TV shows. And now we know that a bunch of students at UMD have been doing this.
So, you know, one thing that struck me, and this is like, I don't know, frat boy's gonna frat boy or something, but like, this is such a college-y story, right? This is the story of like fraternity hazings being awful and like young people, men, aggro men making like pretty bad decisions is like a fairly classic standard story. This one has some details that are like still stand out from that. But like, you know, in living in DC, you hear so little about Maryland, about the University of Maryland, that is. And it almost seemed like novel that like, oh, look, this is a college-y story about college people being college-y. And yet it's happening here. And we have on the Green Line a Big Ten major research university.
Yeah, it's right there.
Right. If you just sort of listen to like the Washington Conversation or look at the news or whatever, you'll hear about Georgetown, you'll hear about GW, you'll hear, you know, whether it's like something scandalous or something good or some expert being quoted. And Maryland, it's weirdly like not nearly so present in the DC conversation. And it's a strange thing, because you'd think it'd be kind of in their interest to be like, we are part of the capital of the country, an exciting place where you students can learn things. And similarly, that local Washington would be like, hey, we have this amazing research university right here, and we should knit it into our world. And I don't know, like, maybe this is just like my news diet, but I encounter it much less per capita than some sort of much smaller schools with less variety of stuff.
To be fair, it's not that close to the Green Line, so maybe that's the problem.
So this is a Jacob environmental reporter is bringing up the transit issue.
Exactly. If you've ever taken Metro up there, it can be, you know, a little bit of a challenge to get to the campus, but that's
just
me. Well,
I mean, people do have cars.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. It's also like what you were talking about, how college kids do tend to stay on, like they're focused on college, right? It's like I went to Northwestern, which is about 40 minutes outside of Chicago, and people ask me all the time about what I feel about Chicago. How do I like Chicago? And I mean, I do like it, but I feel like I didn't spend as much time there until after I graduated, because while you're at school in undergrad, you're kind of just, you know, doing your extracurriculars and going to your parties. And maybe because there isn't as much of a UMD student presence in DC, we don't talk about it as much. Whereas you see Georgetown and GW kids everywhere, especially like at peak times of the year, like when they're all arriving and when they're all leaving.
Or right. go to Columbia Heights Target when yes. Howard is starting, and you'll see a lot of Howard students.
You're right. And the betting has disappeared.
So Jacob, as you're saying that, like when the Purple Line opens, all of a sudden we're going to hear a lot more about it.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe. I do also feel like we're in some ways blessed, I guess, that this is the first time that we're dealing with a significant hazing incident in the DMV. I mean, when you think about the kinds of stories that have permeated the news about Greek life across the nation, this is mild comparably. I mean, it's not good, you know, again, kids being forced to drink urine, but it's mild compared to some of the other stories. And maybe that's kind of part of it. Like, you only hear about college news on a citywide or nationwide scale when it's really, really bad.
Yeah. And the other universities that get attention in DC are, I mean, I'm sure like there are like frats in some places, and George Mason is huge, but they are less traditional, like big land grant campus with a fraternity row kind of thing. So when you hear about like GW student misbehavior and stuff, it tends to be some different genre of college kids outraging the surrounding population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Everybody knows that getting that perfect Mother's Day gift is basically impossible, but we promise Mom will love this one. The Capitol Hill Restoration Society House and Garden Tour is back this Mother's Day weekend on May 11th and May 12th. Tour 9 elaborate homes and gardens and 3 historic buildings on Capitol Hill that you can't normally enter. And if you can't make it, check out the Capitol Hill Restoration Society's other events like walking tours and monthly preservation cafes. You can buy tickets for the Mother's Day House and Garden Tour on Eventbrite, and be sure to follow CHRS on Facebook and Instagram at Capitol Hill Restoration DC. Hey, DC. One of the reasons hosting this show is so important to me is this statistic from the U.S. Surgeon General. Ready for it? The percentage of Americans who report feeling very attached to their community is only 16%. Now, there's a lot of ways to look at that number, which, by the way, is pre-pandemic data. But here's how I'm thinking about it. CityCast DC is something that we're building to make it easier for you to feel attached to this community. I don't want anyone to feel lonely or bored here in DC. I want you to know how you can help make this city more fun and more livable, and where all the good local stuff is at. And if you think we're doing a good job, I'm asking if you'll become a member of CityCast DC today at membership.citycast.fm. You'll get exclusive perks like ad-free listening, event invites, and members-only guides. But most of all, you'll be part of a project dedicated to making the number of DC residents who feel attached to this community a heck of a lot higher than 16%. See you over at membership.citycast.fm, and thank you.
All right, so Jacob, last time you were on the show, we talked about sort of new environmental stuff that would be rolling out soon. One of those things was the DC e-bike voucher program, which friend of CityCast, Junaid Dill, has reported on this week for Axios DC. This is a program where you, the citizen, can get a voucher to help yourself purchase an e-bike, which are not cheap. And that it could be like up to $2,000. It's also, it depends on your economic status and so on. There's like $500,000 available for this. It launches April 1st. It's not necessarily a seamless and easy application process because they're going to take in the applications and then weigh them based on who is most needy of the help. But they anticipate like, I mean, I guess with the $500,000, they anticipate like 250 people taking advantage of this. The argument is get some cars off the road, decrease congestion, help the environment, and so on. Do you guys think it's going to be a thing a lot of people sign up for?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna sell out right away, and I think the application window is, I think, just 2 weeks. They're going to go very quickly, which is great, and it shows great demand for it. And it's, yeah, it's super generous if you're one of the, you know, preferred applicants, which is based on income and that sort of thing. You can get up to $2,000 for a electric cargo bike or a $1,500 for a regular e-bike, which goes a long way to making it more affordable.
How much one of those things cost on the market?
I don't know what the like cost range is, but I think you could get a regular e-bike certainly for $1,500 up to much more than that. And I think a cargo bike would probably start at much more than $2,000.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a mad rush. I did once look this up. I think when the e-bike rebate news first started to come out that they were considering this. And I was shocked because normally when you hear about voucher programs or rebate programs, you don't expect it to pretty much fully subsidize the cost of the thing. And in this case, it kind of does. And that's wild to me. I also have been thinking about this in terms of like, I don't know, it's a lot of money, right? It's a lot of money that the city government is setting aside for this because there's going to be such high demand and they're not going to be able to give the voucher to everyone who wants it. I feel like there's going to be a lot of pressure for them to do this again next year. And we have some serious budget concerns about next year. If you heard our episode from Monday, we laid it all out. Like, it's not looking good.
So that's the thing, that there's this kind of whiplash effect in local sort of DC politics, in the most wonky corner of it, where like, you know, in the last, I don't know, the last number of years, with DC's finances have become so much better. And it used to be regularly sort of financial trouble, but that they've got this, you know, great bond rating and just a sense of like, it's, you know, responsible stewardship. And there have been kind of cool programs that you can do. I mean, e-bike vouchers, right? That's kind of a cool, nice extra thing from your government. We had the garbage commissioner on, and there's a lot of, you know, they'll pick up your Christmas tree. And these are all good things for the city. And the sense was Washington can afford these things, such that the council, you know, they sued the mayor over SNAP benefits. And now all of a sudden it's a holy cow, there's a budget deficit, maybe 600 million, maybe 800 million. And can we afford nice things anymore? And it's just, it's sort of strange, the inauguration of this, which is, you know, money already appropriated in previous years, happening right as this, what's going to be, I think, a pretty horrible budget debate kicks in.
Yeah. I mean, $500,000 in the city budget is very small, right? So yes, but also like this is just such a small expenditure versus the whole budget. But I do, I mean, I was thinking about this with the Baltimore, and if you followed the Baltimore recycling saga, but they stopped collecting recycling for a number of years because
I did not realize that. That's wild.
Yeah, I think it was during the pandemic, but they just restarted it this month, which, you know, kind of blows my mind that here in 2024, you know, a major U.S. city was just not recycling at all. So I don't think D.C. is going in that direction, but that's where my mind goes when you're talking about the district budget and tightening things.
It does make me wonder about that compost curbside program that they had started, though, with a few households. And the hope was that if it goes well, they would roll it out citywide, and maybe that would be on hold, though, right? Like starting up a new service like that. And I think you're right, Mike, that these are like, you know, can we afford nice things? But then it's also scary because the nice things we're talking about specifically here, like with a compost curbside program or e-bike rebates, those are things that are meant to protect us as citizens long term, right? Because of the environmental repercussions. And they do feel like the easiest things to cut right now, but then there are long-term consequences of that that will end up costing us even more. So it's like, it's a hard thing to hedge your bets on right now.
Right. And this is sort of whether it's like your personal budget or right. anything else. Like that's the trade-off you tend to make, because compared to like the person who's not, doesn't have access to like basic social services or public safety or whatever, it seems a lot less urgent that like, you know, one of you guys puts out that much less pollution into the world in the next year. When you probably, you guys personally probably don't put up that much pollution either. But are you all gonna put in for this credit?
I don't think anyone is going to get them except for people who are, you know, in the preferred candidate category, which I don't think I would be. So I leave that for people who qualify, but I would absolutely do it if there were enough vouchers to go around. I would definitely do it.
Yeah, I'm with Jacob. I would love an e-bike, but I don't feel like I need one. I feel like I'm happy with my bus and metro accessibility, and I can leave the rebate for people who need it more than I do.
You don't get rejected if you don't apply, Priyanka.
It's true.
I was also going to say, I mean, we've been talking about this as an environmental thing, as a climate thing, reducing emissions. But it's also, I think, especially like if these are going to people with lower incomes, it's really like has the potential to improve people's quality of life, I think, and help people just like get to work more quickly. Like if you're going from taking a bus, maybe having a long bus commute, to riding an e-bike to work, like that could be really life-changing. I mean, I started riding the e-bikes when I think Jump was the first company that brought them here with bikes that you could rent. Now those are Lime bikes, but I was a skeptic. I was like, oh, who needs an e-bike? You know, it's cheating. It's not really biking. And then I tried one. It's like, oh, this is like having a superpower. Like it's like biking, yeah, but like you're a superhuman. Yeah. And it's most times like the fastest way to get around if you're just going within the district. It's as fast as car traffic usually. It's much faster than taking a bus and often faster than metro. So I think like it's not just the environmental piece of it, but I think it can really improve people's lives to have access to an e-bike.
That is so true. And we're actually going to have an episode coming out in a few weeks where our production assistant, Ash, is trying out all of the different e-bike companies, like the ones you can rent in the city. And then he's going to, you know, assess how much they cost and accordingly figure out at what point is it cost effective to actually just buy yourself an e-bike instead. So that's going to come out while we're still in the window of where you can apply for the e-bike rebate. So keep an ear out, and maybe after Ash does his research, I will sign up for a rebate. We'll see.
All right. So Jacob, speaking of getting around town, you have this new endeavor you're going to do where you want to visit every park in DC. And there's a ton of them, or at least a ton of things that are controlled by park agencies. Some of these are like traffic circles and random grassy triangles. But tell me about the plan and what you're going to do, and also why. Don't you have anything better to do?
Well, you know what? I got laid off recently, so I guess I don't have anything better to do. No. So there are supposedly 683 parks in the District of Columbia, and that number comes from the Trust for Public Land, which has kind of an amazing database of parks in cities around the country. And I think parks are just fascinating to me in that there's just like so many stories in DC that can be sort of told through the lens of our public lands, like how we've, you know, set aside, protected these lands, how we've maintained them, how equitable the access is across the city. Like there's just a lot of stories that are tied up in those things. And I came to really appreciate the parks in the city, especially like during the pandemic and having that outdoor space. So I think this is an exciting way for me to like explore the city a little bit, also dig into some of those issues that I think are really interesting about environment, about racial justice and equity, about history. And yeah, so that's my challenge over the next few months, is to try to visit all of these parks. And as you said, many of them are like little triangles or circles. There's actually one on my street that's basically just a tree. And that's technically a park administered by the National Park Service. And DC is really unique in its park system because of our kind of weird federal status here. 90% of the park acreage in the district is controlled by the federal government, mostly the National Park Service. And there's just a lot of kind of weird problems that stem from that, but also really great opportunities. And also we have, you know, access to some of the greatest urban parks in the country. So it's kind of, you know, uniquely messed up in some ways and uniquely great in some ways. And I really want to explore those issues.
So weirdly, I wrote my political column, which everyone should read because it's awesome, about this week, that the Park Service, like if you look at surveys of like most popular federal agency, it always wins, right? Mm-hmm. Except in DC, it's like constantly on the receiving end of like grumbling that in most places would be directed at City Hall. And, you know, it turns out that for historic accident dating to like when Home Rule happened, the Park Service, in addition to like the mall and these sort of national treasures, controls like the inside of your traffic circle and your neighborhood park and so on. And a lot of people think they're not really built for, I mean, they're sort of the culture is like Yellowstone or whatever, like we protect these places from humans, but Parks and Rec kind of scene is more like we build basketball courts for humans. And that seems like a subject of like constant, very weird grumbling that sort of says a lot about DC's strange constitutional status. That's the thing you ran into a bunch as a reporter in DC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the Park Service's mission includes, you know, that they're trying to preserve the landscape and the cultural heritage and all that. The word preservation features very, very highly in their mission. And so when that comes to an urban park system, you know, that doesn't always make sense. If you have like a unmaintained, overgrown, grassy patch of land, preserving it in that state is probably not the best in the best interest of residents. Or even if it is more more well-maintained, like maybe that land would be best served with a tennis court or a playground. Right. And so there have been, obviously there are parks, national parks that have those kind of amenities. There's mm-hmm. golf courses, there's playgrounds and stuff, but they do tend to be less, I would say, less well-maintained, have less amenities than the district controlled parks.
Because if you're a neighbor or a voter, you can vote out the mayor right. or something if you're mad about the state of your park, but you can't really vote out the chief ranger.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, no one at the Park Service is having to respond to like 311 requests. But I was going to also say just on the flip side, like the district government might be incentivized to take some parkland and build something on it and have some more tax revenue, whereas the National Park Service is much less likely to do that. So I think that's, you know, one benefit is that we have saved a lot of these green spaces in the city because of that federal ownership.
That's a good point. I am so excited you're doing this with us, Jacob. But okay, 683 parks.
Yeah.
How are you going to do this?
It remains to be seen. But my idea is I'm going to get on my bike, get on Metro, and I think I'm going to try to map out, you know, section by section. I'm planning to start kind of at the bottom of the diamond and work my way up. Ward 7 and 8 have, I think, more big parks and fewer the tiny ones. So I think that might be a little bit easier. And then kind of once you get into like Capitol Hill and downtown, it's just crazy the amount of little parks.
Yeah.
But I think I'll be able to kind of map it out. And a lot of them are close together, which is good. And I'm not going to go to like every acre of every park. And I'm not going to spend forever at each one. But I want to, you know, visit each one, get an impression of each one, and then, you know, dig into some of the stories and some of the more interesting places.
Right. And then we're going to get you a CityCast DC mug, or actually it says Hey DC, which is the name of our daily newsletter, so that you can take pictures with the mug. If people want to follow along, how can they do that?
So yeah, I think I'll try to tweet about it or, you know, post on X about it, about when I'm going out places. So you can follow me at Jacob Fenston, or, you know, obviously the CityCast Twitter account as well. But yeah, I will try to, I would love to meet, if someone wants to meet me at their favorite park or meet me at their park that they have a huge gripe about, like that would be awesome. I'd love to have people, or just share with me your thoughts as I'm going along with this, but I'd love to have people come along with me for this journey.
Yeah. And we're also going to have a page on our website, dc.citycast.fm, where you can follow along Jacob's journey. So yeah, follow all the things. I'm so excited about this. I think it's going to be really fun. Also, if you want a free mug, listener, we are going to be giving one out, a free mug, to one of our members. So to sign up to be a member, just go to membership.citycast.fm. It costs as little as $8 a month, and you get ad-free listening, exclusive access to our events before other people know about them, and you'll get this mug, and it's really beautiful. We'll post a picture of it. So you have to sign up before Friday, April 5th, though, for a chance to win the mug. membership.citycast.fm.
Awesome. Well, Jacob, good luck out there in the parks.
Thank you.
Call us if you get set upon by any packs of wild dogs or other dangers.
Let me get a flat tire on my bike. I'll see if you can come help me.
Or if we can get you an e-bike.
There we go.
Yeah, we'll get the voucher going. And Priyanka, awesome to see you.
Yeah, of course.
And that is all for today here on CityCast DC. Our senior executive producer is Priyanka Tilvey. Our senior producer is Julia Caron. Our newsletter editor is Kayla Cote-Stemmerman. Our production assistant is Ash Durbin. And our hosts are Bridget Todd and me, Michael Schaefer from Politico. Music is by Alex Roldan. If you enjoyed this show, why not go to the neighborhood park and tell everyone about it? We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Bye.